Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic, taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Adam, we spent a lot of time yesterday breaking down the Nashville's best sports bracket that we've put together here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's basically taking a look at 64 of the best athletes in our city in the last 30 years. And the Jeff Fisher region took place yesterday. Steve McNair, the number one seed in the Jeff Fisher region. I want to run through these matchups and get your thoughts on them. And we'll also look at how the people voted yesterday in the first round of that took place. So we'll start with an easy one. The number one seed, Steve McNair, against number 16, Ian Clark. I would assume, Adam, Steve McNair would be your vote in that one.
A runaway win for Steve McNair over Ian Clark. With much respect to Ian Clark, who I also believe is an NBA champion.
He is.
So I will go with Steve McNair, no question.
Well, Steve McNair ended up with 94% of the vote by the people yesterday. So the people have agreed with you. Steve McNair has moved on to the second round.
Who are the 6% that voted for Ian Clark?
That's what I want to know. Like, are you doing that? Maybe you're just a really
big Ian Clark.
Ian Clark may have got a lot of people together.
Yeah, he might have. I mean, was there a limit to how many times people could vote? One per person? Or was Ian Clark just hitting Ian Clark as many times as he could before he got tired and only ended up at 6%?
It was a one-time vote, so Ian Clark had some pull to him, apparently. Yeah,
apparently.
Good for him. All right, so the really interesting matchup that McNair will play the winner of, that I think was one of the more interesting ones yesterday in terms of the 8-9 matchup. We expect 8-9 matchups to be really, really close. The 8-seeded Tomas Vokoun of the Nashville Predators in their expansion days, the goaltender, and number 9-seeded Taylor Lewan. Adam, how would you have gone in that direction?
Ooh, that's tough, because I believe Tomas Vokoun held pretty much every Predators goaltending record until Pekka showed up.
He did.
So certainly among the fan favorites in Nashville was Tomas Vokoun, and still is. But certainly during his prime with the Predators, he was one of their best players. Taylor Lewan, you know, he's a polarizing player. I think that's one way to put it. He's had his great moments. He's had his not-so-great moments. I would personally go with Tomas Vokoun. I think he had a more positive impact on the Predators during his time than Taylor Lewan has had during his time with the Tennessee Titans, although Taylor Lewan might be listening to this because I know he consumes a lot of media, so I apologize in advance to Taylor for listening, and I am willing to take the heat on Twitter, but I will go with Tomas Vokoun in this matchup.
The people disagree with you. Taylor Lewan wins with 61% of the vote in our conversation, or in our poll yesterday. He moves on to the second round. I also had Taylor Lewan moving on to the second round in that one as well. Tomas Vokoun, Adam, left out in the cold.
Mm-mm. I don't like it.
The 4th-seeded P.K. Subban against number 13-seeded Vince Young. Adam, which direction would you go?
Whew. Well, Vince Young certainly came in with a lot of promise, of course, and his Titans career flamed out extraordinarily by the end. P.K. Subban was here for 3 years, but you can't deny the impact that he had on the Predators reaching unprecedented heights in terms of winning the division, winning the President's Trophy, getting to the Stanley Cup Final, being a Norris Trophy finalist, creating the Blue Line Buddies program, which still continues, and he has brought to New Jersey with him as well. I will go with P.K. Subban.
P.K. Subban wins with 67% of the vote yesterday by the fans, so he moves on to the second round. The 5th-seeded Javon Kurse against number 12-seed Jay Cutler.
Ooh, the freak. You know what? I don't know too much about Javon Kurse because he was way before my time in Nashville, but I know how dominant he could be early on in his career, and I think Jay Cutler should get some love for his breakout role on Very Cavallari.
Yes.
But I will go with Javon Kurse.
Javon Kurse overwhelmingly wins with 77% of the vote over Jay Cutler. This was one yesterday that I pegged maybe for an upset alert in the making. Number six-seeded Shane Foster, former Vanderbilt basketball player, a really good player at Vanderbilt, against the 11th-seeded Derek Barnett of the Tennessee Volunteers, a great defensive end there, grew up in the Nashville area, played high school football here as well. Adam, which direction would you go between Shane Foster and Derek Barnett?
That's a good question because, as you mentioned, Shane Foster did have a great career for Vanderbilt, did not have an NBA career, but has still continued to make an impact in Nashville in terms of his work with the Amend program. And that's a good question. I think I might go with Derek Barnett just because he had a more successful professional career. So let's go with Derek Barnett.
Derek Barnett wins with 67% of the vote over Shane Foster. Munson, I called that one yesterday. It's going down.
You did. I think that one was a pretty easy one, though. But you did call it. So kudos to you, Mr. Bracket Buster.
That's basically all I wanted to hear you say was kudos to me. So thank you for being...
you're welcome, but don't take too much credit. I mean, it was pretty easy. It was pretty. Even Adam said it. It's pretty self-explanatory.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
We'll skip. You know, the 3-seed of Keith Bullock. He wins with 93% of the vote. Adam, I think you would have voted for Keith Bullock. I also think you would have voted for Roman Josi as the number 2-seed. He wins with 93% of the vote as well. The interesting one that we talked a lot about yesterday was the 7-seed. R.A. Dickey against number 10-seeded Ryan Tannehill. Did Ryan Tannehill have enough on his side here in Nashville to win over R.A. Dickey? Which way would you have gone there, Adam?
Well, I think you would have to contend with recency bias because of what Ryan Tannehill has done or did for the Tennessee Titans last year, coming on in relief of Marcus Mariota, taking his job, he and Derrick Henry leading the Tennessee Titans to the AFC Championship game. And R.A. Dickey had a tremendous career in the major leagues, but I think because of what just happened in Nashville with Ryan Tannehill, I think people have that front of mind, so I would have chosen Ryan Tannehill myself.
Ryan Tannehill wins with 55% of the vote against R.A. Dickey. So the people have spoken. A very close vote between Ryan Tannehill and R.A. Dickey, but Tannehill moves on to the second round. Munson, what's our level of surprise there?
I'm not. We talked about this yesterday with the recency bias, even with Derrick Henry, so I'm not surprised.
So now we look ahead today, and voting will begin today on the Tim Corbin region, which David Price is the number 1 seed going up against 16, Keenan Reynolds. The 8-9 matchup, John Henderson versus Paul Kariya. Frank Wycheck, the 4 seed, Dansby Swanson at 13. Brant Snedeker at 5, Jawan Jennings at 12. The 6-seeded Ryan Suter versus the 11-seeded Jordan Matthews. The 3rd-seeded Chris Johnson against the 14th-seeded Jalen Hurd. The 7th-seeded Kevin Byard against 10th-seeded Joseph Newgarden. And the 2nd-seeded Shea Weber against the 15th-seeded Mike Miner. Adam, you would not have believed the disrespect thrown out to Shea Weber yesterday by Munson and Joe Rexroad. They've got him losing to Kevin Byard in the second round.
I was just talking about that with Marquise. And as Marquise said, if you have the nickname Mayor of Murfreesboro, you can't lose in said bracket. And look, Kevin Byard has made a tremendous immediate impact for the Tennessee Titans, and it's great that he played locally at MTSU and is getting plenty of praise for his play in the secondary for the Tennessee Titans. But Shea Weber, you know, the first homegrown superstar the Predators had, a 3-time Norris Trophy finalist with the Predators, a 5-time All-Star, captain for 6 years, you know, the hardest shot in the league. I think it's a no contest that Shea Weber should be Kevin Byard, personally. But
yeah, I really don't think it's all that close either. But I understand the argument. Look, Kevin Byard's a great player, so yes. I get it. He's in the top 3 at his position at the safety position as well. So I get it. I understand that part of it. I just think Shea Weber, his impact here was pretty high.
Yes.
As far as like the 8-9 matchup in this one, because those are the ones that are, I think, the most interesting in these brackets, John Henderson, Paul Kariya, That's tough. I've gone back and forth on that like five times, Adam, and I'm still not sure I've come up with an answer.
Yeah, that's a good question, because John Henderson, you know, had a 10-year career in the NFL, of course, played for the University of Tennessee as well, and was a two-time All-American. Paul Kariya's time in Nashville for the Predators was short, but, you know, one of the first major impact free agent signings that David Poile made as GM of the Nashville Predators. Paul Kariya still owns the single season scoring record, which I believe is 85 points.
Yes.
85 points. So he still maintains a hold on a record for the Nashville Predators. So, you know, what do you put more weight on? You know, a career like John Henderson's, you know, 10 years in the NFL, a two-time Pro Bowler who's from Nashville, who played for Pearl Cone, or, you know, a player like Paul Kariya, an elite player at the height of his career, who still has his name in the record books for the Nashville Predators. I think that's a toss-up. I really do.
Going to be interesting to see how the voting turns out today. And again, you can vote on the Tim Corbin region of our bracket today at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Munson, I believe the voting opens at 9 o'clock today.
Yes, it does.
9 o'clock today, you can start that vote on the Tim Corbin region of the bracket, again, on Twitter at 102.5 The Game. When we come back, The Ringer has come out with an interesting article mentioning 40 classic sports games and moments to revisit. We'll get into that next. There's some interesting games and moments on that list that I want to get to. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vinyan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vinyan from The Athletic. And Adam, The Ringer has come out with an interesting piece, kind of revisiting 40 classic sports games / moments as we're all going through a pause here without any sports to take place. And there are some moments and games on here that I think are really interesting to kind of look back on, and, you know, kind of a couple that snagged my attention, and we'll get your thoughts on this as well. But just a couple that snagged my attention were, you know, Malcolm Butler's interception against Seattle,
yep,
in the Super Bowl, and everything that went along with that. Like, you know, the Seahawks are driving down the field. They look like they're in pretty good position to win the game. And then Pete Carroll and the Seahawks make the decision to kind of throw that slant route there. Malcolm Butler jumps it, and all of a sudden the Patriots have won another Super Bowl. And just like the run the ball memes with Marshawn Lynch and everything that came out after that, it was just hilarious. Every time the Seahawks to this day are in a position on the goal line, you'll see just tweets come in back and forth about how they should have run the ball in that situation. But a great play by Malcolm Butler, and that's really where Malcolm Butler, who of course plays for the Titans now, became a household name around the league.
Yeah, certainly. I that caught my attention on the list. And another Tennessee tie that came up on the list was Corey Brewer's 51-point game,
yeah,
which I had completely forgotten about. But, of course, he was just soundly defeated by Roman Josi in the bracket challenge we were just discussing. Of course, my favorite addition to this list was Christian Laettner, the shot against Kentucky. They played that game. Yes, well, they played that game on CBS a couple of weeks ago, or I don't even know when it was because I've lost all sense of time over the past month. But I had watched that game on my own, but I don't think I had ever sat down with my dad and watched that game. So he had worked that day. He got home and was late in the second half of the game, and we watched it together. And he was reacting as if it were happening live, which I thought was pretty funny, even though he knew the outcome 30 years ago. As I scroll through this list, there are some other ones that come to mind. Here it is, the one and only Corey Brewer game, April 11th, 2014. He had 51 points for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I also see the Rangers beating the Devils in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final, of course. Stephane Matteau scoring the game-winning goal in that game for the New York Rangers. The Jose Bautista bat flip game against the Toronto Blue Jays versus the Texas
awesome
Rangers. That was another one on that list. So there are a lot of interesting submissions on this list, for sure. Your boy Ray Allen downing Georgetown in the Big East tournament in 1996 was another one as well.
Linsanity. That's, you know, thinking back to when Jeremy Lin was just tearing it up with the New York Knicks. Munson, I'm sure you remember Linsanity as well. I mean, it swept the nation. I mean, it was probably the best thing to happen to the New York Knicks franchise in the last 30 years, really since Patrick Ewing has been there. And it was awesome to watch. I mean, Jeremy Lin came in. He looked like an absolute superstar. Now, he's forged actually a really good career for himself since then and is still in the league, but has never really been anywhere close to the same player as he was during that time when he came in with the New York Knicks.
No, absolutely. It was something that the Knicks needed, and they needed some kind of spark, some kind of pizzazz and something to bring people to the games, and he brought it. And I mean, it wasn't just, you know, he was just a flashy player off the court. That's the reason why people were coming. Like, he was producing on the court, and you know, he's had a good career since. Plays with the Rockets at certain point, and you know, he played with the Raptors, so he's yep. been kind of around the league since then. But you're gonna always harp on that moment. My favorite basketball moment on here, though, is Allen Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue.
Oh, man.
That's,
and this is coming from a Laker fan. Like, I watched that series between Allen Iverson and the Lakers, and I just felt so bad for Allen Iverson.
It was not a great series.
Because I just knew, like, he was going have to score, like, 50 points
a game. You didn't have belief in Eric Snow, is what you're telling me? You didn't think Eric Snow?
No, or Mutombo, none of those guys, no. They were awful. And they still made the finals because of Allen Iverson and how good he was. And that game one that they won, that the only game they won in that series, I mean, it just proved that Allen Iverson, man, if he would have had a team around him, he could have done a lot more damage in the league than he did. So.
I'm looking at this roster, man. There are some interesting names. Theo Ratliff, Eric Snow, Aaron McKee.
Studs.
Tony Kukoc apparently was on the Sixers that year.
If you want to compare...
Todd McCullough, that was the guy I was looking for.
If you compare rosters with the LeBron James when he first made it to the NBA Finals, when he had like Vergeal and Ilgauskas and Damon Jones.
Don't hit on Big Z over there.
And Damon Jones. Like, that was his first NBA Finals team. I think Allen Iverson's was worse. LeBron got swept by the Spurs in that series.
Now, that's an NBA 2 game I would like to see. The first LeBron Cavaliers NBA Finals team that lost to the Spurs versus the Sixers team that lost to the Lakers. There's your NBA simulation that I want to see.
That would be great.
Why would you want to watch that? Just get out of the way and let LeBron and Allen Iverson play one-on-one.
Man, Allen
Iverson... everybody else out of the way.
As I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, I was watching the first 30 for 30 that I watched in my binge-watching of 30 for 30s was the Allen Iverson no-crossover one. And, man, I forgot just how dominant of a player he could be. I was watching high school highlights, of course, but then they had his early highlights in the NBA. And... that crossover, man, was deadly. I mean, when he crossed over Michael Jordan, that's when you knew he was for real.
Yeah, no question about it. He was so much fun to watch. Another game on this list, Adam, that I'm sure you remember, the United States and Canada's men's Olympic hockey final in 2010. Still to this day, one of the best sporting events that I've ever watched in my life. That game was awesome with Sidney Crosby scoring the game winner for Team Canada in overtime.
No, that was great. The golden goal, of course, you're referring to, and the game, of course, happened in Vancouver. So there was a distinct home ice advantage for the Canadian team. Yes, one of the sporting events that no matter how far removed we are from it, I can watch over and over and over again. And one thing that was on this list, speaking of, we were talking about basketball before, one thing that was on this list that really brought some nostalgia back was George Mason's 2006 run to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Because that was my senior year in high school. And I remember I applied to George Mason before the NCAA tournament run that they made. And I was concerned that I wasn't going to get into George Mason because there were going to be so many kids that were going to apply just because of their run to the Final Four. It was a safety school for me. I did get in. It's based in Fairfax, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. But that was so much fun, especially living in Virginia at the time. All of the teams, when they beat UConn, that was a huge deal. So that's certainly something that I'll remember as well.
The Tiger Woods versus Rocco Mediate 2008 U.S. Open that's also on this list that the Ringers put out there, I remember watching that because I think it got pushed back to that Monday when he had to go in the playoff with Rocco, and that was like right before, you know, I think Tiger Woods was playing. He was on like a hurt knee in that tournament and ended up winning that major championship in 2008. And up until he won the Masters last year, that was the last time he had won a major tournament. All the things that came out with the crazy story from Tiger Woods came out after that tournament. So I remember watching that happen, and that was kind of the last time we saw Tiger Woods as, you know, in his prime Tiger Woods, which still to this day I think all three of us would agree prime Tiger Woods is probably as dominant of an athlete as we've seen in our lifetime.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And it is weird looking back at that particular major championship run. And then, as you said, thinking about what happened after that. Thinking about where Tiger Woods' career went from that in terms of off the course issues and his health. But you're right, watching old school prime Tiger Woods, even as someone who doesn't consider himself a golf enthusiast, it doesn't get much better than that.
It doesn't, and a really painful memory for me on this list that I'm sure
the Spurs beating the Heat.
Out, the Spurs ending the Big Three dynasty.
I was waiting
in Miami,
for you to mention that.
Look, I get it. I understand it. There's a lot of venom that went there from LeBron choosing to go play in Miami, and that team and that trio specifically together is never going to get the credit I think they deserve for how awesome it was to watch them play. But it was interesting, like the different dynasties that have happened, like. And I think it really begins, obviously the Spurs and how they were in terms of their homegrown talent that they drafted. You think back to the Lakers and the runs they put together with Kobe and Shaq. But like how much of like a dynasty league the NBA has been, going from the Lakers to the Spurs. The Celtics win in 08, then all of a sudden the Lakers went back-to-back. And then it's basically the Miami Heat show for the next few years. The Spurs win, and then it transitions into a different dynasty in Golden State. Like, it is interesting from an NBA perspective over the last 20 years, like how many different dynasties there's been.
Yeah, I as I was looking through this list last night and I got there, I figured that either you were going to bring it up or I was going to bring it up to poke at you a little bit.
Yes.
Hey, the Heat had a great run, man. You can't take that away from them.
You can't. A lot of people are going to try to, though, because that's – look, they just don't like that he made the decision to go to Miami.
Well, I mean,
I don't think they like the fact that he sat at the Boys and Girls Club and made a whole special out of it. Do you think – here's a question for you quickly. Do you think LeBron James's Miami Heat tenure or legacy or whatever you want to call it would be different if he did not do the decision?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Marquise?
I think there's no question.
I think it would be different. And I also think it would be different if he didn't say not five, not six, not seven. Okay, how many did they end up winning?
Two.
Oh, two. So that's three away from five, six, seven, and the rest of the numbers he said. But yeah, good job, LeBron.
Also now when the Lakers won, past 4 years. So okay, well they've won zero with LeBron. So maybe they don't win anymore with LeBron.
I mean, it's too early
to burst your bubble, Munson.
Hey, it's too early to tell, man. You guys didn't win one your first year either.
That's true. Still the most painful loss in the history of me watching sports, that series against the Dallas Mavericks. When we come back, Jay Morrison, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic, will join us. We'll get into the draft plans for the Bengals, also what they've done in free agency as well. That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic, taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And a lot of eyes place squarely on the Cincinnati Bengals as we look ahead to the NFL draft coming up next month. Actually, later this month. It's April 1st. It's hard to believe we're finally in April after the long month that was March. And to help us talk more about the Bengals, we bring on Jay Morrison, who covers the Bengals for The Athletic. Jay, hope you and your family are doing well during this time. Thanks for taking time to come on with us today. We got Jay?
Can you hear me?
There he is. There you go. Jay, thanks for taking time to come on with us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Glad to be with you guys.
Absolutely. So obviously, Jay, everybody expects Joe Burrow to be the first overall pick for the Cincinnati Bengals once the draft takes place on April 23rd. What kind of a jolt do you think Joe Burrow can give not only the team itself, but this franchise in general in Cincinnati?
Yeah, that's it. It's not so much the team itself. He's going to be as good as he is, a Heisman Trophy, number one overall pick. He's still going to be a rookie when he walks into that building. They are getting younger by the day with some of the moves they're making. But I just think it's going to be more of a jolt to a fan base that's been jumping ship for years. Every year they would bring back Marvin Lewis without a playoff win. More and more people walked away. And then they got the move they wanted last year with Zach Taylor, a new head coach, and things went south with them losing their first 11 games and going 2-14. So the fans that remain are the passionate ones that are never going to jump ship on this team. They've got to work on getting back the average fans and creating some excitement. And really, with Joe being an Ohio guy, you can kind of build a fan base on the other side of the state just by bringing a guy like that in.
Jay, obviously, with Burrow expected to be the number one overall pick, we know that that's going to be a need that the Bengals have. What are some other needs as you look at this team as they approach the draft taking place later this month?
Yeah, the biggest need going into free agency, really the biggest need they've had the last several years, and they've, for whatever reason, chosen to ignore it, is at linebacker. And they did get a linebacker in free agency. Josh Bynes played for the Ravens last year. He's played for the Lions. He's a guy that's 30. He gives them now two linebackers in that room. It's still a major need. They're going to have to be creative. They're going to draft at least one, probably two, and then they're going to have to go get a handful of undrafted free agent guys and just see who they can make stick. But they've tried to address their lack of ability, their lack of success in the running game by going out and getting a big run stuffer and DJ Reader, and then getting some cornerbacks in Mackenzie Alexander and Trey Waynes that are really good tacklers. So they're going to try to mask the deficiency at linebacker that way. The other issue is offensive line. They really need to upgrade every spot on that offensive line, except they hope left tackle. They drafted Jonah Williams in the first round last year. He tore his labrum in OTAs this the entire season. He's back and healthy, so they're hoping he can be that anchor at left tackle for the next 10 years, but they need work at every other spot on that line.
Jay Morrison, my colleague at The Athletic, covering the Cincinnati Bengals here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jay, the Cincinnati Bengals spent a lot of money in free agency. The question they need to answer, of course, is what that means for the future of Andy Dalton in Cincinnati in terms of the money that he is expected to make, and of course, the expected arrival of Joe Burrow. What do you expect the future to hold for Andy Dalton, and what do you think the Bengals' best avenue to take is with their longtime quarterback?
Yeah, it still looks like it's either cut or trade. It just doesn't make sense to keep a guy around to be a backup quarterback and a mentor and pay him $17.7 million, which is what Andy would be due this year on the final year of his contract. So they wanted to have a trade and the trade done by this time. It hasn't happened. They had discussions with the Bears and just couldn't agree to terms on compensation, and the Bears went in a different direction. There's been radio silence from New England. I think they thought that was going to be their most likely trade partner, and the Patriots have just shown no interest whatsoever. They seem content to wait out the Bengals, let them cut Andy, and then they can sign him for $6 or $7 million if that's the direction they want to go and not have to give anything up. They're still holding out hope. When you get into the draft, things happen. If like three quarterbacks fly off the board in the first four or five picks and the Chargers are left holding the bag there, maybe they offer the Bengals something for Andy Dalton. But if we get through the draft and they haven't traded him, I think it's going to be a situation like we saw in Carolina with Cam Newton, where it's just thank you for your time, but here's your walking papers.
The Bengals placed the franchise tag on wide receiver A.J. Green, injured, missed the entire season last year. What are reasonable expectations for A.J. Green coming back this season?
Yeah, nobody knows. I mean, he's missed 23 of the last 24 games. He's had two surgeries since anybody's seen him play a full game. He had the toe injury that shut down his 2018 season. And then last year, the ankle injury on the first hour of the first practice of training camp, and he never played all year. So the Bengals want him here long term, but they don't know what he can do still. He's all of a sudden got this injury history. He's on the wrong side of 30. they want to keep him around, but where do you come up with the money figure to know that a guy is 100% healthy? They haven't even seen him have a full practice under new head coach Zach Taylor. So they want to wait him out and have him prove that he's healthy. He knows this is his last chance at a big payday, and they're so far apart right now that was really the only course of action they could take was to tag him. And AJ said last year that he wouldn't be happy if they tagged him, but he would understand it. He understands the business, and he wasn't going to sit out and skip making $18 million.
Jay, I want to circle back to Andy Dalton real quick, because I think it's interesting to discuss, what's his legacy going to be in Cincinnati, and how much do you think he still has left in the tank if he ends up on another team elsewhere this season?
I do think he can be a very good quarterback with pieces around him. We've seen that. As far as his legacy, I think the further away we get from it, the more appreciation there will be. We kind of saw it last year when they benched him for three games in the middle of the year coming off the bye week. They started Ryan Finley. It was a disaster, and really that was the move that kind of cemented them getting the number one overall pick, because I think they win two of those three games if Andy Dalton starts instead of Ryan Finley. And when they brought Andy back after that three-game experiment, there was a lot of, what fans were in the stadium, there was a lot of outpouring of support. And on social media and just around town, I think people like Andy as a person. He's been great for the city. There's that frustration of never winning a playoff game. And he got booed at the All-Star game here once the Reds hosted that early in his career. And I just think it was kind of a love-hate relationship to begin with. And everybody's ready to move on. Everybody's ready for Joe Burrow. But I think the fans are going to show their appreciation for Andy for all that he did once this thing finally comes to an end.
Jay, do you think there is a team or situation that best works for Andy Dalton, either in terms of the way that he plays or which team can offer the Bengals the best assets in return?
Yeah, well, I did. I still thought Jacksonville would be a possible landing spot. I don't know how sold they are on Gardner Minshew. They hired Jay Gruden as their offensive coordinator this year. Jay Gruden was the man most responsible for bringing Andy Dalton to Cincinnati in 2011. He was a first-year coordinator. That was the year of the lockout when we were going through a lot of the similar stuff we're going through right now. And Jay Gruden really stood on the table for the Bengals to draft Andy Dalton. But that's a cash-strapped franchise, and they just keep spending. They gave former Bengals tight end Tyler Eifert $15 million over 2 years. So they I don't know if they have room for an Andy Dalton contract on their books. But just looking at the pieces, the depth chart, and the coaches in place down there, that's the place that I thought would be a possible landing spot with the Gruden connection.
Jay, last thing for you here. Obviously, the Bengals announced they have released veteran cornerback Dre Kirkpatrick, spent 8 years with the Bengals. What was your reaction to the news that they were moving on from Dre Kirkpatrick?
What took so long? I mean, we all saw this coming. We were talking to Dre about it on locker cleanout day on December 30th.
Yeah.
He said, oh, no, that's not going to happen. When I've been healthy, I've been one of the best cornerbacks in the league. And he's another one. He's like an Andy Dalton. We're fans. It's a love-hate relationship. He's never really kind of lived up to that first-round billing. We all saw this coming. I mean, they weren't going to be able to pay him $9.5 million this year, especially after they went out and paid Trey Waynes in free agency. And I just think they had to get some things sorted out on the books, get some things straightened out. But we all we saw this move coming months ago, and then it finally became official yesterday.
Jay Morrison covers the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Jay, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, and hope you and the family stay well during this time here.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You guys have a great day.
Absolutely. You too. Jay Morrison, ladies and gentlemen, has been our guest. When we come back, Adam, we're going to do something very interesting. I want to draft between myself, you, and Marquise Munson. We're going to draft our starting five in the NBA using all-time NBA players. We'll go through a little mini version of a snake draft. That'll be next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan and Marquise Munson taking you through this Wednesday morning. And fellas, I want to do something a little interesting here. I want to put together our own personal NBA drafts of a starting five lineup. And this could be NBA players of all time, not just modern day NBA players, but I'm talking in your prime, all time NBA players. And I want to do a snake draft. So we're going to go through five rounds. We're each going to put together a starting five in terms of our all time NBA players. And we'll see who comes up with the best team. And I have generated a random order of draft using a website that does these sorts of things. And Adam, you have ended up with the first pick. Marquise will pick second, and then I will go third. And then in the second round, we'll do the snake draft style. Well, I'll go first, Marquise will go second, and Adam, you will go last. So, without further ado, you start. You have the first pick in this draft.
Well, first, I just want to ask one rule. Are we doing the traditional five positions, point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center? Or are we going positionless basketball here?
You can go positionless. You put together whatever team you want to put together.
I'm going to go traditional.
Okay.
So with the number one pick, of course, you have to go with Michael Jordan. I mean, who else could you go with? Michael Jordan in his prime at shooting guard out of North Carolina. Was it the Alan Parsons Project? Was that the song that they used to come onto the court
yes.
with? I need that in the background, Marquise, if you can, you know, get that going. So I'll pick Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Marquise, no pressure. Just pull that up right now.
Yes, pull it up right now.
I know he gave you zero warning about it.
Yeah, zero whatsoever.
He's a professional.
I guess he doesn't know how this thing
works.
He's
a professional.
Don't you just have that ready to go? Marquise, you're up with the number two pick. What will your selection be in your first round?
My first pick of this draft will be a shocker here. Kobe Bryant.
Oh. Kobe Bryant at the shooting guard position.
Absolutely. I gotta go with my favorite player first, obviously.
I respect that.
But I have a plan. It's a method to my madness. So okay. Kobe Bryant,
like,
obviously, in his prime, you know, that's a clear number one. Need a scorer on my team. Need that dog on my team. And I got dog and Kobe Bean Bryant. Number eight, probably.
Number eight? I was going to say, which version of Kobe do you like the best, 8 or 24?
I'm a fan of 8.
Michael Jordan will wear number 45 on my team. He'll be the number 23
Good.
Jordan wearing number 45.
Yeah, he'll be 24 Kobe wearing number 8. Because that's when 24 Kobe, he had to carry the team, and he was angry all the time. 8 Kobe was just cocky, young, winning championships.
But he got the nice fro, though.
He had the nice fro.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going Kobe, number 8. But with the mentality of 24.
Okay, I like that. With my first pick in this draft and the last pick of the first round, I am going to select LeBron James, small forward, of the Miami Heat, Cleveland Cavaliers, Los Angeles Lakers. I think, in my opinion, and a lot of people are going to hate me for this, I think the most complete basketball player of all time. I'm going LeBron James with my first overall selection.
No reaction
from you all.
I mean, it makes sense.
It makes sense. I knew that was good. I knew those were going to be the first three off the board. Easy.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you knew that.
All right.
So I'm going to kick off the second round here, and we're going to start building the team on the interior a little bit. And to do that, I think I'm going to take, in what my opinion has been the most dominant interior player we've ever seen, that is Shaquille O'Neal. He will be my second pick in this draft.
All right. Go for it.
Oh, I like it. That might have been what I was going to go with next, but it's cool. You know,
that's fine.
I got.
Yeah, you're
going
to go back to the Kobe.
He was basically
and Shaq
rebuilding.
I
he was basically rebuilding the Lakers.
He is. That's
so
what he's doing.
Rick,
I knew
Fox,
that was going to happen.
Rick Fox is next.
Now, Vlade.
Absolutely.
Karl Malone.
Marquise, you're up.
I go Adam Morris. I'm just kidding.
Mark Madsen.
No,
Luke Walton.
I will go. No, I am basically going to go with a Laker, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay. All right.
I like it.
Legend. I need the sky hook in the paint, so I'm going to go Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I like it.
I'm gonna go with the Laker as well. My second pick at point guard, Magic Johnson.
Okay.
I'll take Magic Johnson as my point guard. And since I've built up my front court, or I mean my back court, I need my front court. A power forward, Tim Duncan.
Okay. Adam coming in strong here. Tim Duncan off the board.
No, he said so Magic Johnson. You didn't hear him. He said Elton Brand.
Is that what he said?
He said Elton Brand.
I did not say Elton Brand. Though I do love Elton Brand. No, I take Magic Johnson at the point and Tim Duncan at power forward.
Okay, so Adam has three of his starting five already selected. So just to recap very quickly, Adam has selected Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Tim Duncan. So those are three of his five members. Marquise so far has selected Kobe Bryant and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I have selected LeBron James and Shaquille O'Neal. Marquise, your third pick in the draft is now up. Who will you select?
I am going to select with my third overall pick. I'm going to keep adding to this. Now, I know this is going to be a scoring team, probably not a team that plays a lot of defense. I'm going Dirk Nowitzki.
Mm. Oh, yes.
I'm going Dirk on this. So we have Kareem and Dirk inside the paint. I love it. I'm going Dirk.
I like that. That's a good pick. I mean, you talk about a guy that really changed the way the game was played at that position. You know, a big guy that can shoot. Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, he's about as good as it gets in terms of changing the game that way. So I like that. That's a good pick, Marquise.
I like it too.
Well done.
Thank you, guys.
With my third overall pick, I need to address the point guard position. So I've gone with LeBron and Shaquille O'Neal. Look, there's a ton of different options out there at point guard that you could choose and that could be really effective. I am going to take a different approach to it, though. I'm going to choose the greatest point guard of all times in terms of shooting the basketball. Steph Curry will be my selection at the point guard position.
I thought you were going to say Jason Kidd when I heard best shooting point guard of all time.
I did consider that, but Steph Curry is going to be my point guard on this team.
All right.
I will now kick off the fourth round of our draft. Now, we're getting close here.
Yes.
And look, I think you both would agree that you knew this was going to happen at some point. Am I taking him too high in this draft? Maybe. I don't know. I'll leave that up
just
for everyone
Dwayne
else
Wade to, get it over
to
with.
Decide. Dwayne Wade is going at my shooting guard position in this draft. Prime Dwayne Wade, firmly the third greatest shooting guard of all time.
All right. Your bias is showing, but I get it. I get it.
That's not bias. That's not even arguable. He's the third greatest shooting guard of all time.
I defer to Marquise on this one.
Yeah, let me think. Yeah, he might be. He might be the third. Maybe. I might give him third. It's easily Kobe. But I don't know. It depends on what you classify Allen Iverson as. Because Allen Iverson was kind of a two guard. So he could easily
he
can easily play shooting guard and he can also play point guard as well. So it all depends on how you classify Allen Iverson.
It does. I still think prime Dwayne Wade is better than prime Allen Iverson. Maybe people
Regardless of what Paul Pierce will tell you on TV, D Wade is better than Paul Pierce. I will say that.
I mean, come on. That was the most ridiculous thing said in the calendar year of 2019. There's no question about it.
That was hilarious, though. I was like, Munson, he really does believe that.
He really does, and that's the thing. Like, some people just say things for the sake of saying them. Paul Pierce actually believed that. Munson, you're up with your fourth pick.
I need some defense. So okay. I'm going to keep it L.A., and I'm going to go Kawhi Leonard with my pick.
Okay.
Have him play
like
small
that.
Forward. Got two scores inside the paint. Obviously, I got the score in the backcourt with Kobe Bryant, so I got to add some – I got to add a small forward that can play some defense, so I'm going to add Kawhi Leonard, who can also score as well.
I like that. That's a very good pick, and you're talking about a guy that's won two championships, two finals MVPs with two different teams. Maybe he does that again with the Clippers. All of a sudden, he starts creeping into this discussion when you're talking about some of the best players to ever play the game. Very good pick there, Marquise. I like it.
Me too. I like it.
Adam, you're up with your fourth pick.
All right. So I need to address my small forward and center positions. So at small forward, we already have Magic Johnson on the team, so it would not be a true best of team without his greatest adversary. So at small forward, I am going with one Larry Bird.
I like it. That's a good pick right there.
And then at center, because I have Tim Duncan, I've got Mr. Fundamental, at power forward, but I also need some strong defensive play as well on the low block. So to complete my starting five, I am going with Hakeem Olajuwon.
Hakeem Olajuwon, I like it.
Yes. So my starting five, now I have a complete lineup. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Tim Duncan, and Hakeem Olajuwon.
That's a solid starting five there, Adam. I like it.
I went with more of the vintage players. You guys added some more recent flavor. I went like full back in the day kind of stuff here.
Well, the picture is not yet complete. Marquise, you have your fifth pick to wrap it up. Maybe you go vintage here with your pick. Munson, what is your fifth selection in this draft?
Now, I need a point guard, and this was tough because I'm stuck between two of them. But I'm going to go with Russell Westbrook.
Okay.
I need a versatile point guard. He can play a little bit of defense. He doesn't have to be too reckless because he has players around him that can score, so he doesn't have to be too reckless on offense. But he can pass. He can rebound. He's a dog, so I got two dogs in the backcourt. And then I also got a defensive player in Kawhi Leonard who's quiet. And then I got the finesse players in Dirk Nowitzki and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So I got the best of three worlds in this league. So I'm going to go Russell Westbrook with my last.
I like it.
I like it.
I was going to go Allen Iverson, but Allen Iverson, it was too much scoring on this team. Not enough, like, all-around player.
Yeah, you need a good balance. Like, you know, I look at my team, and you've got the flashiness. You got Michael Jordan. You got Magic Johnson. You've got Hakeem Olajuwon. With the Dream Shake in the low post. But you also have the fundamentals in Larry Bird and Tim Duncan. So I think it's good to make sure that you've got different kinds of skill sets on your lineup.
All right, so with the last pick in this draft, and I want to get you guys' opinion on this. I need a power forward position. So and I'm kind of weighing the option of selecting a traditional power forward or a guy that's played both the three and the four. What should I be allowed to do in this process? Should I be allowed to pick whoever I want and put him at the four position, even if he spent most of his time at the three, or should I be required to select a traditional power forward? I'm fine either way.
Up to you.
It's up to you, man.
It's your team.
I was going to end up drafting like Kobe as my point, and then just moving Kawhi to the two and then getting a small forward. But, yeah, hey, this is your team, man.
Okay, well, with that in mind, you know, I'm kind of going back and forth between, you know, Charles Barkley, Karl Malone at the power forward position. But a guy who spent some time there and who I want to put on the team just because of the versatility of the player that he is, Kevin Durant will be my power forward to round out my lineup here. So with that in mind,
I figured you were going to say that. I figured he was going to do that.
I wasn't sure. I thought you might go with. I thought you might go with Charles Barkley, maybe some KG.
Well, no, I assume because when you say a player that can switch from the small forward and the power forward position, I kind of automatically go with Kevin Durant.
Yes.
In that case,
I thought you might go the more traditional route, though, in sense of a true power forward, which is why I thought maybe Charles Barkley or Karl Malone or Kevin Garnett.
But yeah, that's his pick. Kevin Durant.
So we have all put together our starting five here on Morning Drive. We'll tweet the lineup of all time in the NBA. We'll leave that up for you to decide. That's up to you. Put that out on Twitter and you can vote in our poll. When we come back, what should David Poyle's approach to the team be for the Predators if this season does doom in the NHL? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.